Welcome to another episode of Sales Transformation. In this episode, host Colin Mitchell is joined once again by Roman Pesser to discuss the importance of self-awareness and effective communication in sales. Colin, back to you.
I'm going deep into a training called Radical Collaboration. It's all about learning how to actually become aware of these elements. About half of it has to do with just self-awareness. I know this sounds like a little bit foo-foo-y, but when it comes to self-awareness, it's like, do you even know how you show up as a boss to meetings with your bosses, to meetings with your teams, to your peers in other departments? Are you aware of how you might be triggering their responses to things negatively? I had an experience once with a previous coworker where this coworker was cross-departmental. I needed this guy to help me with some RevOps stuff. And randomly once his boss at the time, the CMO, was like, "Hey, Ronan, can I talk to you?" I'm like, yeah, what's going on? And just for the sake of anonymity, I'm going to make up the name, but she was like, "Yeah, you know, John, let me know that you've been really aggressive about working with him on fixing like reports and getting stuff to work. What's going on?" And I was like, "Huh? What are you talking about?" Now, in my mind, I come from a culture where it's like, you just say things like they are, and that's okay. Everyone is open about it. And so therefore, it's safe to say things very bluntly. This guy came from a culture where it was the opposite. Like, you have to sugarcoat everything and just make sure it's said very delicately. And he was taking my approach as very aggressive and didn't like it. So I was completely blind to that. That's an example of how, like, just not even being aware of my communication style, which is one of the biggest areas of failure, how I communicate, how this person receives good communication. That's one of the key areas where you can start to already improve. Like, how do I make people feel safe?
And I think that a lot of people just assume that being that way is totally fine, because I can very much be the same way, where it's like, hey, I think I'm being open and honest and transparent. And some people take that in a very different way or receive it differently than you may think.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. My open and honesty might end up being what Kim Scott in Radical Candor calls like the aggressive a-hole, right? It's the person who, "Oh, I'm just being honest." Man, we've all seen that in Silicon Valley. Radical, what does she call it? I was going to say collaboration, but Radical Candor. But used as an excuse to just be a dick to someone, like, that is clear, which is the next best thing, but it's not kind. And in Kim's research, also at Google, also stemming from this Project Aristotle, by the way, Kim discovered that radical candor, which is one of the most successful ways of communicating well, has these two elements of kindness and clear. And the worst version of communication is the apathetical, "I don't care" person. The next worst is the person who thinks they're being kind, but then isn't being clear. It's like the manager who, and I've fallen into this category too. I'm so sensitive to your emotions. I'm just not even going to say what I really need to say. And that person walks away not hearing what they needed to hear. And the problem never gets addressed. I had a chat with Tom Mendoza, former president of NetApp, while they exploded. And he talks about this. They won one of the best culture in America, I think, in 2009, right at the peak of his career. And one of the things he attributes to that is he was like, all of our leaders knew you just had to say what you needed to say. But you're saying it to a human. You got to say it in a way where the person can actually hear you, but don't sugarcoat it. Say it. Get it out there. The worst thing you could do to someone is not tell them what they need to hear.
Yeah, I think that the interesting thing is, how do you even go about starting to understand how you're being perceived by others?
Yeah, that's a great question. And that's where it can be really hard. I fall into this all the time too. It's like, sometimes our ego gets in the way. We don't really want to hear the feedback, but sometimes it's as easy as finding someone we could trust and being like, "Hey, can you help me out here? Like, how am I sounding? Like, how am I coming off? Am I actually, cause I think I'm being transparent and kind, but do I just sound like a big dick? Like, as I'm saying something to someone in a mean way, or am I just not being clear enough?" Having allies at work means people that you can trust, people that you can talk to, that you can ask them for feedback. I know lots of organizations will have different feedback mechanisms. Like HR teams will deploy these 360s and stuff like that. But ultimately, like, that stuff sometimes gets, looked at it as a joke, almost as a formality, because people aren't even honest in those. But the whole point is it's anonymous and supposed to be honest. But yeah, when it comes down to it, try to find an ally, someone who doesn't necessarily feel, wouldn't feel threatened by you in any way, and therefore can give you very clear and candid feedback that you can trust, and maybe do the same for them. But being able to understand, like, how do I sound? How am I coming off? Having a mirror, someone who could hold that up for you, goes a long way.
And I think that asking for that type of feedback is what starts to create that culture of, hey, this is a safe environment to make mistakes, to ask for feedback, to speak candidly and honestly to one another. You know, if you're a newer company, you know, starting off with the right foot, a little bit easier. If you're a company that's been around for a little while and there's a lot of these old behaviors and practices, like, it's going to take a long time potentially for people to start to actually trust, like, hey, is there an angle here? Is it actually safe? Is it not? Is this a trick? So how do you overcome some of that stuff?
Yeah. So let's talk about some of those older companies, because you're right. Actually, the smaller startups are small enough that in theory, everyone should be able to, like, connect really quickly and easily. And that feedback is pretty obvious and clear. I mean, just thinking back to my time at Stylo, there were like 10 of us at any given time. We all knew what was going on. Like, I mean, we shared Airbnbs when we traveled to an event, and like, got to know everyone really well. But we also got to, like, call stuff out really easily. Like, so if someone was doing something that was like, yo, that's really not cool, you could just say that. But let's talk about larger companies where the culture is actually going to be departmental and team by team, because the companies have 10, 20, 30,000 employees. These giant corporations that have been around for a long time. This is where actually a lot of the work that I'm now doing with Radical Collaboration comes in. They work with companies like NASA and Toyota and these larger corporations, the Fortune 500s, because they have such long history, such deep-rooted cultures that sometimes create conflict, unnecessary conflict. And conflict is one of the worst things that can get in the way of progress. If you're a business, conflict is kind of like cancer, right? Like, it's going to grow and make things worse to the point where it's going to affect your bottom line at some point. It's going to affect your ability to be profitable, be innovative, to be able to grow. The opposite of conflict is collaboration. And there's a third version also, where in the radical collaboration language, they call it red zone cultures, which is conflict filled, green zone cultures, which are collaborative. But then there's the pink zone. This is where there's a lot of hiding, passive aggressiveness. Mm. It's like the, you know, I'm going to talk about Colin to the coworker behind his back after he leaves a meeting. But at that meeting, things are going to seem good between me and Colin. I'm going to be like, you know, Colin's actually super dumb. He has no idea what he's doing. And the strategy is the worst. After he's left, like, that's equally, if not even more toxic than in your face aggressiveness. Wow. And so what tends to be true about this stuff comes back to how the individual interacts with their own emotions. And so what they teach us in the training is, it's all about learning the tools to do two or three things really well. Identify what's going on for yourself in these moments, in these dynamics, in a meeting, a one-on-one, you know, maybe email exchange. How to then think collaboratively. So they teach a form of negotiation, which is actually really cool. It's this idea of, like, let me first seek to understand what you need, and then I'm going to lay out everything that I need, and let's go line it all up. Where can we just give each other what we both need? And now that we've peeled back some layers, is there actually going to be any conflict? One example of this, which is like the classic example, if I have like a single orange, one orange, and two people who want it, who do I give it to? I don't know. I could split it down the middle. Does that work? Here, you take half, you take half. But if I ask the first person, I'm like, hey, what are you going to do with the orange? And they go, oh, actually, I'm baking some orange essenced brownies and I just need the peel. And the other person goes, yeah, I'm making orange juice. I just need the fruit. Yeah. Solves itself. Problem solves itself. But so by talking and going deeper and trying to actually understand while parking your defenses at the door so that you can listen and hear, sometimes these things will solve themselves. Mm-hmm. And that's the essence of collaboration.
Yeah. Man, this was an awesome topic. I'm glad we went down this path here today. Lots of nuggets for, you know, seasoned sales leaders, first time sales leaders. Any final thoughts? And then where's the best place for people to get into your world?
Come find me on LinkedIn, Ronen Pessar, R-O-N-E-N, or my website, ronenpessar.com. But yeah, the final thought here is change is possible. Just because things have been happening a certain way doesn't mean that they're going to continue to happen that way. And so that starts with a little bit of hope and believing that things can be different in the future. And with that belief, you can actually create the kind of environment and culture that leads to high performance consistently.
Awesome. And we'll include your link there in the show notes to make it easy for everybody. If you enjoyed today's episode, please write us a review, share the show with your friends. It helps us to reach more sellers and sales leaders to help transform the way that they sell.